This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Well, Well, Well. Adam and Tex with you tonight from the Health Promotion Program at the Victorian AIDS Council / Gay Men's Health Centre. Thanks to Doug and the Rainbow Report team for another great show. Welcome, Tex. How are you tonight?
Adam, it's great to be back with you after my 4 or 5 weeks off on annual leave. It's wonderful to be back in the studio, although it's even more freaky because when I went on leave, it was just starting to get dark about 8 o'clock at night. Now it's pitch. So we're heading towards the depths of winter.
Well, how was your holidays anyway?
It was lovely. I explored the environs of the suburb I live in, Reservoir, and all of the surrounding op shops.
That's no different to what you usually do.
But I went further afield for op shops this time.
Oh, good.
Now, Adam.
Yes, dear?
I have a very important question for you.
And what would that be?
What's on the show tonight?
On the show tonight, we'll be chatting with Dr. Jason Ong from the Paran Medical Centre about his PhD project relating to anal cancer in gay men.
Oh.
And soon, obviously, we'll be doing the usual stuff. So we'll have a news item and later on some snippets of news about events and stuff that's happening around town. But, Tex, we do love to hear from our listener. And so how can they get in contact with us tonight?
Well, there's a variety of options, different platforms, different devices. If people would like to speak to a real-life person, we have a real-life Roberto ready to take your call, 1300 Joy 949. So that's 1300 Joy 949. Or if you'd like to get an email or an SMS into us here in the studio, you could send us an email onair@joy.org.au, or you could send us an SMS 0427 Joy 949. Or alternatively, all of these options. You can like us via Facebook. That's facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy.
And I should actually mention that it's Paran Market Clinic, not Paran Medical Centre. I can't believe I got that wrong because that's where I go. But anywho, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. And that was No Doubt with Just a Girl. Did you like that song, Tex?
Yes, it was okay.
It was okay?
Yeah. Well, it was a bit, you know, you can't really hear what they're saying because the words are a bit jumbled because they're just saying them. So I didn't actually hear what she was saying.
Sorry, it's not the immortal Dusty Springfield.
Well, it would have been nice if it was.
Well, this is the part of the show where we like to change tracks, as I like to say, and basically shuffle our papers and get our sort of news sort of focus on, I guess. And the article that I came across this week that I thought was actually quite interesting was from our very good friends at AIDSMAP.
Yep.
Which we love because we always go there for work. I think we bang on about it every week. But if you haven't checked it out, check it out. It's a great resource of information from all around the world around HIV, sexual health and lots of different things.
And it's really easy. It's simply the word AIDSMAP, M-A-P. So AIDSMAP, one word, .com.
Yes. But the article was, basically the heading is, a majority of HIV-positive gay men in Dutch survey take their viral load into consideration if having unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
So viral loads are very big, kind of a hot topic in terms of, I guess, risk reduction strategies that are employed if people are engaging in unprotected anal sex, mm-hmm. whether it's receptive or insertive. But basically about 40% of men who answered a community survey for HIV-positive gay men in the Netherlands said they took their viral load into consideration in deciding whether or not to use condoms. So the survey found that consideration of viral load was almost as common when having sex with partners who had HIV as when having sex with partners of negative or unknown status. But disclosure and discussion of viral load was far more common with HIV-positive partners, whereas viral load was rarely discussed with partners assumed to be HIV-negative or of unknown status.
And this was a study conducted by the Netherlands HIV Association, or the NHA. It was the study also found that this group of HIV-positive men, who, as part of a community consultation panel, which was providing advice to the Netherlands HIV Association, might be assumed to be well-informed on HIV prevention matters, were as a group by no means convinced that undetectable viral load protected them from transmitting HIV to their partners. Not surprisingly, the more confident individuals were that this was the case, the more likely they were to take it into account as part of their decision to have sex without condoms or condomless sex.
Yeah, and I guess the paper that we're specifically talking about only looked at the answers from the 177 men who said they had an undetectable viral load. Mm-hmm. And out of basically all of them, out of the 177 except for two, were on antiretroviral therapy. So basically, what were the results? So I guess 68% had ever had unprotected anal sex since their HIV diagnosis, and of these 68%, 61% did it without a condom the last time they had anal sex. So the researchers asked respondents if their last sex, I guess, had been with a casual or a regular partner, and of the 73, we're getting into figures here, so don't worry, bear with us. Mm-hmm. So of the 73 people who had unprotected sex on their last encounter, 59% said it was with a casual partner, and 41% said it was with a regular one, which I found quite surprising.
Why so?
Well, mainly just because, I guess, in your last sexual encounter, if you were HIV positive and you had an undetectable viral load, and obviously we just said before that not, I guess the group as a whole didn't really rely on undetectable viral load as the only means, I guess, of reducing the risk of HIV transmission or acquisition. Mm-hmm. So I found it quite surprising that, I guess, if it was a regular partner, there'd be more of a conversation about undetectable viral load, the fact that you were HIV positive, there'd be more of a discussion or a negotiation around sex, whereas this is sort of saying that there was kind of like half-half, that there was actually more people with casual partners than a regular one. And I just thought that was quite surprising. Yeah, and I guess of the 73 people, they also asked the HIV status of the most recent partner, and 52% said they were HIV negative, and 48% said they were HIV positive. So there's kind of like two things going on there. There's unprotected sex with people of HIV status unknown or negative, mm-hmm. and unprotected sex with people who are HIV positive. So HIV pos sex and HIV pos neg sex.
Unprotected sex partners were more likely to be buddies. That's to say, if they were HIV positive, and more likely to be casual mates if they were HIV negative or of a status unknown or unknown status, people who hadn't been tested. And that's what one would expect, as HIV status is not usually discussed until people have reached a certain level of trust. It's, as we have discussed on many occasions, if people are having protected sex here in Victoria, they don't need to disclose their status. Mm-hmm. But it's not unusual for in New South Wales, people need to disclose whether they're having protected or unprotected sex.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, I think the most interesting thing I found in the article was that Moore said that they had taken viral load into consideration with HIV-positive partners than with men who were HIV-negative or unknown status. And I guess that sort of does really sort of piggyback off what you were saying, that I guess the more comfortable you feel with someone, the more likely that you've got trust and the more likely you are to disclose your status without, I guess, fear of rejection or stigma or whatnot, which sort of means that if you're buddies and you know somebody else's sero status and you're happy to engage in that behaviour, then that's what you're going to do. But obviously with a casual partner, having that conversation is much more difficult. Yes. Anything else you'd like to say?
I don't know, because I see we're running out of time. I wanted to go on to the conclusions, but perhaps we can direct the listener to the actual study by posting it on our Facebook page.
We will indeed. Well, this is Well on Joy 94.9. And when we come back, we will be joined by Dr. Jason Ong from the Paran Market Clinic. This is Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well on Joy 94.9. And joining Tex and I tonight in the studio is Dr. Jason Ong from Paran Market Clinic. Welcome, Jason. Thanks for joining us. And how are you this evening?
Very well. Thanks, Adam.
So I guess, Jason, can you tell the listener a little bit about yourself and what you're doing work-wise?
Yep. So firstly, thank you very much for inviting me to come on. It's a real pleasure. So I was born in Malaysia, actually. So I came to Australia when I was 9 years old. And I was sort of interested in science and the human body when I was young. And so I ended up studying medicine at the University of Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I've been a medical doctor for the last 13 years now. And in the last 4 years in particular, I've been specializing in sexual health and in HIV.
Okay. And you're from the Paran Market Clinic.
Yes.
So how long have you been at PMC, as I like to call it, because it's my local hood doctor? Jason is actually my doctor.
Yeah. Yes. Interesting.
Indeed.
Yeah. So how long have you been at PMC?
I started working there 4 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah. I just love my time there. It's a great place to work.
Now, Jason, you're currently working on your PhD. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yep. So I started my PhD last year at the University of Melbourne. And I'm doing my research at the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, which is part of the Alfred Health. And I guess my aim is to try to improve the health of gay men by studying how to screen for anal cancers in those infected with HIV.
Well, we're just going to listen to a quick song, or not a quick song according to Texas standards, because Texas songs are like 30 seconds and then we're back. It's like a snippet, really. But we're going to listen to a song and then we're actually going to get into the nuts and bolts of your PhD and anal cancer in gay men. But this is Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well on Joy 94.9, and that was Stevie Nicks, The Edge of 17. Did you like that one, Tex?
I did actually like that. Stevie Nicks, I love Stevie Nicks because she has long hair and the long flowing dresses and things and looks really gorgeous on the film clips. Well, she did on Countdown all those 100,000 years ago.
On what, sorry?
Countdown. Program on the ABC, darling, a million years ago.
I'm just joking with you. Look, if you've just joined us, we're chatting with Jason Ong from Paran Market Clinic about his PhD, which was about anal cancer in gay men. So what exactly is anal cancer, Jason?
Yeah, so I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk about anal cancer. I mean, cancer is obviously something that people aren't really comfortable in discussing. Mm-hmm. But ignorance is not bliss. And so I hope your listeners tonight can have a better informed, to be better informed about what anal cancer is all about. And it may not be a comfortable topic, but I think it's really important. So, I mean, anal cancer itself is a type of cancer that affects the anal canal, which is inside the bottom, as well as the skin around the anus itself. And actually, not many people realize that anal cancer is actually the number one non-AIDS-related cancer in people living with HIV. And it's estimated that up to 1 in 1,000 gay men with HIV will develop anal cancer per year. And this makes it as common, if not more common, than the other sort of common cancers that we talk about, like lung and bowel cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jason, are there obvious symptoms, or what are some of the symptoms of anal cancer? Would someone, you said that, you know, it could affect the skin around the sphincter, is it, or the opening of the anus?
That's
so,
right. Yep.
Would there be obvious signs, or is it, would someone by necessity need to go and be checked up?
Yeah, sometimes you may not have any signs, but actually one of our doctors, Dr. Tim Reed from the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, did a study of anal cancers from the Alfred Hospital over the last 18 years. And he found that actually the most common symptom for anal cancer is either bleeding or pain. And in fact, any new lumps or ulcers around the skin of the anus or felt inside the anus can potentially be an anal cancer.
And I guess you did sort of mention that there was a high prevalence amongst HIV-positive guys. Mm. But I guess what was the reasoning or rationale for focusing on anal cancer in gay men in general for your PhD? Is there a high prevalence just amongst gay men in general?
Yes, and specifically gay men with HIV. I mean, there are several groups of people who are at increased risk for anal cancers. For example, people who've had an organ transplant. So it's not just gay men. But if you actually compared the risk of anal cancer in men who have had receptive anal intercourse, so being at the bottom during anal sex, with the general population, we actually found that they may be up to 50 times more likely to develop anal cancer. So this,
wow.
These are gay men. And if you look even more specifically at gay men with HIV, we have calculated that there can be up to 100 times greater likelihood of anal cancer as compared to the general population. So gay men, and in particular those with HIV, are the most vulnerable group for anal cancer.
And so, I mean, what are the causes for anal cancer? I mean, and are there specific causes for, I guess, the higher prevalence in gay men and in HIV-positive gay men?
Yep. It's still under intense research, but as far as we know, there are several factors associated with anal cancer. The first is with an infection with a virus called human papillomavirus, which some of your readers may know about, listeners may know about, the HPV.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a sexually transmitted virus that's highly infectious. So that's the first factor. The second one is smoking. So anyone who smokes has an increased risk of cancer.
Damn.
They have to give up smoking now. And age. As a person gets older, their risk of cancer increases. And it increases for all cancers, but includes anal cancer. So we more commonly see anal cancer in those above 50 years old, but it is possible to develop anal cancer from 35 years onwards. And the fourth thing is the immune system. If it's compromised, for example, with HIV or certain medications, that weakens immunity, these sort of increase. And unfortunately, there is a sort of perfect storm of factors for gay men with HIV because they do have a higher rate of HPV. There is a higher rate of smokers, and they are starting to age. So people living with HIV, it's estimated that by 2015, about more than 50% of people living with HIV will be over 50 years old. And lastly, obviously, the HIV itself because of that change in immunity. So all these four factors together make this group particularly vulnerable.
Now, Jason, is it anything to do with having anal sex, as in engaging in anal sex? Now, I asked this question, it's a bit out of left field, but it's something that someone asked me.
Yep.
Said, well, does anal cancer have anything to do with the fact that that gay men have anal sex?
It does increase the risk, but it's not the only risk.
Mm-hmm.
And we have certainly seen people who never at all engage in anal sex and still develop anal cancer. So it's more to do with the actual HPV virus itself. So if there's fingering happening around the area, or we even see women who swear that they have never had any anal sex and they still develop anal cancers as well. So it's not the only thing that, mm-hmm. that increases the risk.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we're just going to listen to a couple of quick community service announcements, and then we'll be back to delve into more nuts and bolts of anal cancer in gay men. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
And Adam, we have had a couple of messages in already tonight.
Oh,
we've had a woohoo for Stevie. And that's from Adam. And we think we know who Adam is. And we've had a little bit earlier, we had, hello, fellas. Lovely to hear you both on air. Great content as usual. And that's from Nick. Cheers, Nick. And cheers, Adam.
Ah, that's lovely. Well, I guess we were discussing, anal cancer in gay men and, I guess, the fact that you're doing it, Jason, with your PhD. So what exactly was involved in your PhD? Was it survey or research or data or stats or everything?
Yeah, a bit of everything, actually. So even though anal cancer is such an important health issue for gay men, we actually don't have any national guidelines at the moment to help us screen for anal cancer. So there's this big gap in our knowledge at the moment, which we're trying to fill. So my PhD is involves running a study called the ACE study. So ACE for anal cancer examination.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple study to see if implementing a yearly anal health check to gay men living with HIV can actually help detect anal cancers earlier. Because as in many cancers, the earlier we can detect the cancer, the earlier we can give treatment, the better it is for the person. There was actually a study from France that showed that if we can detect an anal cancer at about a centimeter, people actually survive, like 100% of people will survive. But unfortunately, in Victoria, the average size of anal cancer currently being picked up is closer to the average of about 3 centimeters.
Mm.
And if the anal cancers get too large, this means there is a need for chemotherapy and radiotherapy. So I guess for my PhD, we're trying to recruit up to about 1,000 patients in Victoria. And it's not an onerous study to be involved in. All we're asking our participants to do is to do a yearly anal health check and a questionnaire after each exam. And what I mean by an anal health check is it's actually quite a quick and simple procedure. It takes no more than a minute. So your HIV doctor basically just has a look around the outside of the anus itself. And then there'll be an internal examination with a finger. And we just ask to do some questionnaires, basically just to track to see whether we're causing you any harm, whether we're causing bleeding, pain, or excessive worry about cancer. So that's the nutshells of what I'm doing.
Mm. I was quite interested when you said that. You said, did you say 1 centimetre or 3 centimetres?
Yeah. So,
and what does that, mean that is the length of the obvious sign of a cancer or symptom of a cancer?
Yeah, so 1 centimetre diameter of the actual anal cancer itself.
Ah, right. Yep.
Yeah, so if we can find something that small, then we may need... we may be able to avoid chemotherapy, radiotherapy. But if we found something as big as 2-3 centimeters, that's when, I guess, the patient has to go to hospital to get chemo and radiotherapy.
And what have you found from doing the study so far?
Yep. So we only just recruited, started recruiting a few months ago. So we have recruited over 100 patients so far.
Oh, good.
But we need more people to help us answer the question. We are aiming for about 1,000. But some of the major findings so far is that about 2/3 of our participants stated that their doctor actually never spoken to them about anal cancer before. And unfortunately, this sort of reflects the general lack of awareness and understanding of this important health issue in the community, as well as amongst health professionals. But a very encouraging finding so far is that this yearly sort of anal check so far has been highly acceptable to our participants. With 100% of our patients stating that they were happy to do this yearly sort of anal check as part of the study. There were very little complaints or worries resulting from this simple anal health check.
And so I guess the main message, I guess, with you're saying in relation to the 1 centimetre and the 3 centimetre, and I guess the different sort of outcomes that could potentially have,
yep,
is that it's more screening, or I guess more having the conversation with your doctor, bringing it up, as like being more aware. Is that, as I guess, is that what the aim of the study is, to try and find out as well?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yep. I like it. Well, I'll be bringing it up with you next time we have a consult. I don't know why I said that.
Thank you, Adam.
Well, we're just going to listen to a quick song, but this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and that was the unbelievably talented Tori Amos with Bouncing Off Clouds.
Lovely song.
Did you like that one, did you?
I did, actually. It was quite lyrical, and you could more or less understand what she was saying.
Right, well, anyhow, moving on. Well, if you've just joined us, we're chatting with Jason Ong from Paran Market Clinic about anal cancer in gay men in relation to his PhD. So I guess one of the biggest questions that people would want to know, that I would want to know, is how can gay men prevent anal cancer?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, at the moment, there's no real way to prevent it. I mean, the only thing that we have at the moment is that if you're young or you haven't become sexually active yet, The best protection is actually a vaccine that's now available in Australia called Gardasil. But it only works if you haven't been exposed to the HPV itself. So, I mean, the vaccine itself does protect against the common strains of the HPV virus that predisposes someone to develop anal cancer. But the second way, I guess, if you are smoking, to stop smoking. And that will certainly decrease your risk of anal cancers. And, I mean, Quitline is a great resource, or if you see your GP, they can help you with that.
Your question there, Tex? No. Everyone's looking at me because I'm a smoker and Jason's my doctor. So between the two of them,
as you said that, talk to the doctor, I just looked at him and he was looking at you.
Yes.
Now, Jason, is there such a thing as an early detection test or a screening process that gay men can have, or is it simply by asking their doctor, like going to their doctor and asking?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, there is no consensus of how to screen for anal cancer. And that's why we need this sort of research.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with our current evidence, what I normally tell my patients is that, just have a chat with the doctor about anal cancer so that you know what sort of symptoms to watch out for. And if you do notice any of the symptoms, like an unusual lump or an ulcer or pain or bleeding, please go see a doctor and don't just dismiss it as hemorrhoids. Because we did find that people who have sort of grown their cancer to 3-4 centimeters are people that sort of just dismissed it and never had that conversation with the doctor. I mean, in most cases, when you have pain or bleeding, it's not going to be cancer, but it is better to get a health professional to give you that reassurance.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess if gay men would like to know more about your PhD project or be involved, I guess, or about anal cancer in general, where can they get more information from?
Yep, so we've got a website that we set up, quite easy to remember. It's anal.org.au, so anal.org.au. And we also have a phone number that you can call us if you want to just hear more about the study itself, 1-800-082-820. So that's 1-800-082-820. And currently, we are recruiting for this study from the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre or at Paran Marker Clinic. And the service will be rolled out actually in Centre Clinic from the 9th of May onwards. So there are a few places that if you're already patient in those sort of centres, you can ask the doctor to more about the study.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been very, very interesting. I've been enlightened.
As have I.
Yes. Well, obviously, we'll have to get you back on further down the track once you're sort of into the results stage and sort of see what you found.
But that'd be great.
Thanks very much for coming on the show. And we'll actually put out the website and the phone number later on so people, if they didn't get it then, they can grab a pen and paper and we'll read it out later for them.
And also we'll put it on our Facebook page.
I keep forgetting about that, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, Tex and Adam.
No worries. Well, thanks, Jason. We're just going to listen to a couple of quick community service announcements. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and that was Pink with Where Did the Beat Go? And that's a shout out to Leaning, because she loved that song.
Indeed, she did.
She did. But you're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and this is the part of the show where we also like to change tracks. We're not shuffling papers this time, though, but we're asking you to get some pens, some pads, some devices, some slates. Or slabs, or whatever you want to call them, text.
iDevices, yeah.
iDevices. So you can take down some phone numbers, websites, and basically just write down anything that comes up of interest that we mention over the next few minutes.
Okay. HIV and Ageing Forum, Adam.
Yes.
There's going to be a short presentation on the clinical aspects of ageing with HIV by Dr. Julian Elliott, one of the HIV specialists at the Alfred Hospital. And this is going to be then followed by a short presentation on the findings from the report Ageing with HIV in Victoria. That's a qualitative study by Lise Sagiers, Julie Allen, Elliot and Carolyn McDonald.
didn't read those names before you started reading them out, did you?
Did I? Then it's going to be a general discussion about the about a program initiative that aims to support Victorians to age well with HIV. Now, this is happening next week. In fact, it's on Wednesday, the 8th of May at 3 o'clock. It's happening at the Positive Living Centre, which is at 51 Commercial Road in South Yarra. And I'll give you the phone number in a minute, but there's the feedback and input by HIV positive people to inform this process is especially welcomed. You can contact the Positive Living Centre for more information and their telephone number 9863 0444. 9863 0444.
Yep, so if you're HIV positive, I suggest that you actually call up and inquire about this because it's a really, really, really big topic that's within our community. Obviously, as Jason was saying before, by 2015, that 50% of HIV positive people will be over the age of 50. So HIV and ageing is really big on the agenda. But another thing that we do bang on about, but I thought we might get into a little bit more depth with it, is the Enough campaign.
Yeah.
So Enough is enuf.org.au and it's a new website out by Living Positive Victoria. So you're encouraged to submit your stories about stigma and discrimination like Australian Olympian Jai Wallace. There's badges and stuff like that, which everyone's probably seen because it's been out for a while. But there's something that you can do called the Enough Pledge. And I thought we might have a bit of a quick chat about that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Enough Pledge is basically, I pledge to challenge HIV stigma whenever and wherever I see it. I will not sit by and allow anyone living with HIV to fear disclosure. I will take action when I see others gossiping about, rejecting and or promoting negative stereotypes about people living with HIV, and I will commit to being part of the solution, not part of the problem.
So do you have a story about HIV stigma, discrimination or resilience? Would you like to see your story on stage in an original theatre production?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Enough are currently scoping a project to bring some of the stories about HIV stigma, discrimination and resilience to life in an original theatre production. So they'd love to hear your story. So if you haven't already, you can go to the Enough website. It's Enough, E-N-U-F. .org.au and you can tell them about your experiences. And as I just said, well, they're looking to actually turn some of the stories into a theatre production.
Yes.
So a bit like Positive Women, who did a project a few years ago about women talking about what it's like to live with HIV. This is generally people living with HIV talking about what it's like living with HIV stigma, discrimination and resilience.
Wow, I didn't know that they did that, but I think this is a, well, I didn't know Positive Women did that, but I think this is a great sort of thing. So get onto the Enough website, which is enuf.org.au, and make your pledge.
And look, a really important thing I'd suggest to note is that they're not expecting you to get up and tell your story on stage. They'll be turning the stories into a theatre production, and some of the people presenting those stories will be people living with HIV, but they may well be actors as well.
And Tex, would you believe that we've actually come to that part of the show?
We have a quick hello, though.
Oh, do we?
First of all, hello, Adam and Tex. Just saying hi from the lovely Lismore in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales. Great to hear our voices and our banter with a big smile. And that's from Nathan.
Well, I love our banter, so thank you, Nathan. Tex doesn't necessarily love it. As soon as we get out of the studio, I get clipped around the head. Why did you say that? How dare you say that?
Nathan, it's gorgeous to hear from you as it is to see you on Facebook.
But, Tex, would you believe that...
It's not time to finish, is it?
It is.
Already?
I know. I can't believe that our show is just our first show. Well, your first show in about 10 years.
5 weeks. next week on the show, Adam, we're going to be talking about the Victorian AIDS Council and the new police checks for staff and volunteers. So it should be a really interesting topic. Our HR manager, Heather Muir, will be coming in to talk about that. We do need to thank our guest tonight, Dr. Jason Ong. Coming up next is Hide and Seek with Andrew and probably Dean, tall one with the beard.
I think it will be them. And I guess we'll just give a re-shout out to, if you're interested in the research project that Jason was talking about, check out anal.org.au or contact 1-800-082-820.
Anyone you need to say hi to?
Well, I'm not saying hi to my mum.
Okie doke. Well, I'll say hi to Warren in Cairns, to Wayne in northern New South Wales. Perhaps he's with Nathan. And with Deb in Reservoir. What's the last song tonight?
The last song is Family Affair by Mary J. Blige.
No, I know this song. Do and you? I like it.
Do you really know
I
it?
I do know it. Well, as soon as it plays, I'll think I'll know it.
Knock me dead. Well, this has been Well, Well, Well for another week. So join us next week at 8 o'clock, where I won't be on, but it'll be Jason and Tex talking about police checks with Heather Muir, the HR manager at the Victorian AIDS Council. So, night, y'all.
Cheers, buddy, bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.